survive.
Good afternoon, everyone. It is 1:32 p.m. on Thursday, November 21st, 2019. This is an informal hearing on case number PU-13-840. And I'm Commissioner Brian Crosius, joined by Commissioner Julie Fedorchuk and Commissioner Randy Christman. I don't have any opening comments, Commissioner Christman.
I do not either, thank you.
Commissioner Fedorchuk?
Nor do I.
Okay. This is an informal hearing involving only undisputed facts. If there are any disputed facts, we will close the informal hearing and issue a notice of hearing. The applicant does go first in this type of proceeding, but before we begin, we'll have staff introduce themselves, followed by company representatives. And one other point, we are actually going to be doing back-to-back informal hearings, so we will close this one and then we will start a new record on the one to follow. So, Pat, do you want to start?
Thank you. Patrick Fahn with Public Service Commission staff.
Victor Shook with Commission staff.
Pete Bython with Otter Tail Power.
Al Kakritz with Otter Tail Power.
Dan Albrecht with MDU.
Myron Rader with Otter Tail Power.
Okay, and then one more point that's important to the portfolio holder is Commissioner Fedorchuk, so I'm going to turn it over to her and we will go from there.
I guess I actually kind of forgot that I was the portfolio holder on this, but it is a siting related deal. Well, it doesn't really matter one way or another. No, a CPNN is actually you, but I'll go. Isn't it a public convenience and necessity?
That's the second one.
Oh, that's the second one.
Yep, the second one. There's PCNN.
Are we? Okay.
Which one are we on? We are on 13-840.
Oh. I'm sorry. I
thought we were on the first one.
I thought we were. My order was differently too. That's all right. We can do this one. The agenda shows the 19-298 first.
I think they're ready to go at 13-840 up on the.
Awesome. All right. So, this is a pretty straightforward case, except for the going outside of the previously certified area. So I've read through everything and can see how it all happened. But just so we kind of have a clear record and make sure we go through the right processes to make it official, I think it's good that we're having this conversation today. You guys can kind of explain it a little bit in more detail than what's on the application, and we can go from there. The other components, the tree and shrub plan, that makes some sense. I think we'll have a discussion on the changing of the order provisions and on the corridor piece. I'm curious about the background on that. And so otherwise, I'll just turn it over to you guys.
This is Pete Bython with Otter Tail Power. I'll introduce Al Kakritz, who is his project manager on this project, and let him take it from here.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Al Kakritz.
Al, can you spell your last name, please?
Sure. It's long in German, so KOECKERITZ.
Thank you.
You bet. I just thought we'd give you a little update. Here's a brief agenda that we put together, so we won't take too much of your time today. But we thought maybe it'd be nice to, since we wrapped the project up, kind of tell you how it came in and a few items there, and then we'll pass it off to Dan to talk about the corridor issue at Allendale. So as you recall, the Big Stone to Allendale 345 kV project was approved in MISO in December 2011. Otter Tail Power Company and Montana Dakota Utilities are the co-owners in the facility. When we finished the routing process, the route ended up being approximately 163 miles long, 153 miles of that in South Dakota, and the last 10 miles in North Dakota. The endpoints, the Big Stone South substation near Big Stone, South Dakota, And then MDU's new Ellendale 345 substation just west of Ellendale, North Dakota. When we originally filed the route permit, we estimated the project to be somewhere in the $265 million to $340 million. We really were hit a good time in the market with contractors and steel and a number of different things that way, and we were able to bring the project in at $220 million. So feel real good about that. And the project started construction in June of 2016, and we proceeded through construction, placing the facility in service in February of this year. Some of the real successes with the project, safety-wise, we really struck a good position there. OSHA rate of less than one, working over 600,000 hours on the project. Our contractors, a significant contribution, Brink out of Rapid City, South Dakota. I feel really good about hiring a local firm, not a North Dakota firm, but a local firm nonetheless. Tri-State Drilling out of the Twin Cities area as well. We're the two main contractors working on the project. So costs, $1.3 million a mile. Again, I don't think we're going to get a lot of construction in the future at that, but we'll certainly work towards that if we're involved in any other projects similar. And then a lot of steel and a lot of concrete out there, and we seem to really strike a good market on the steel, as I mentioned earlier. And when we originally were predicting, you know, budgets and forecasts for the project, steel was on the rise. And our estimate kind of, it's, you know, go up from there, but it actually took a turn down commodity-wise when we purchased the steel.
What was the date or quarter that the steel was purchased in?
We had steel delivered in 2016, so I think it was late 2015, I think about December 2015.
Q4
2015, I believe it was, yes. So as we sit here today, we wrapped up the project, placed it in service in February, as I mentioned. We were working through our as-built filings and you know, kind of closeout permit requirements for the project. And in May of 2019, then we filed our as-built drawings for the project. And it was as we were working through that process that we noticed the minor shift at the Ellendale substation that ended up being outside the corridor. And so then we talked with commission staff at the time about, you know, looking at that issue and how we want to make a filing for that. And then we had some minor other things that were that had come up along the way. Our tree mitigation plan, we actually filed our tree mitigation plan in July 2014, and we filed that and planted a bunch of trees, and they didn't survive, and we planted more trees, and they didn't survive, and so part of the discussion with staff at that time was the change to the plan as proposed in the filing. And so that's how we landed on the tree piece to that. So I'll turn it over to Dan to kind of talk about the Ellendale sub then.
This is Dan Albrecht with MDU. As you can see from the slide, this is kind of an overview of the shift in the route or the location. Mainly on the substation side.
Can you walk through that? It's just I can't see it real well on the either photo.
The lighter hatched purple area is what was originally submitted.
Okay.
And then the darker purple area kind of on the south and on the lower part of the substation area and also to the left on the screen or the paper. There's kind of like a pizza slice pie of the darker purple that kind of shows a little bit of the shift.
Okay. All right. That's helpful. Thank you.
So the big question is why was the substation moved? The property, it wasn't due to any transmission line crossings or transmission line setbacks or anything. The preliminary reason was basically the design. We did a preliminary design in 2012 just basically to purchase the property. with that, we go off of some assumptions. Generally, our setbacks from township roads or county roads is 60 to 75 feet. Didn't really dig into it very much at that time. Fast forward to 2017 when we started doing the full design, started getting our permits and stuff in order, and the township, there's basically an ordinance showing that the township setback off their roads are 200 feet, which takes 125 feet out of area that we thought we'd be able to use. So with that comes the redesign of the substation. We had to shrink the east-west footprint of it, kind of stretch it a little bit more north-south. Then, so why didn't we catch it right away? I think when we originally submitted the route corridor, we submitted based on the fence line of the original design. We did not submit on the property. So with the change in the design, the fence, if you can kind of look up there, it shows like the proposed fence on this is the top two words or arrows pointing to the fence that we proposed, and then it shifted south about 15 to 30 feet roughly. And that's the existing fence line, which then shows our property line as the kind of the two bullet points up there. Mm-hmm. So everything remained on our property, but yeah, that was just a oversight on our part. Then with the new design, it kind of shifted our dead end to the west, which then kind of changed structure one in the design as well.
So the existing fence wasn't on the property line, obviously, set in?
The existing fence, the proposed fence was north of the property line, and the existing fence is still north of the property line as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the property line is the last line on the bottom of the page.
So, obviously, it's a pretty minor adjustment, and the company owns the land. So, but what I'm more concerned about the process, you know, the fact that there was nothing triggered, because it could have been a bigger change, and it doesn't sound like it would have triggered you guys thinking like, oh, this is outside, or we're watching to make sure it isn't outside, or even a realism that it had gone beyond the permitted area. And the biggest concern for us, at least for me, on permitted versus not permitted or corridor versus outside the corridor, is exclusion and avoidance areas and making sure that those are cleared before there's anything completed in those, any construction completed in those areas. So talk through the process with me on how come it didn't get flagged until after when you're looking at the maps.
I think originally I thought I submitted the property. I didn't realize that I did not submit the actual fence corners. So it was all within our property, and it didn't really, like, if we were going out and purchasing more property to the south, that would have definitely triggered a question for me to go talk to Ellen Ottertail about what we have to do to accommodate or change our request to the PSC.
So in saying that you thought it was on the property, was the entire property surveyed? Was all of that previously cleared? Or was it just the corridor that you actually permitted? So there would have been 30 feet along that line that hadn't been surveyed.
Everything was surveyed for environmental, and the property was, but it was just the submitting of the fence line.
Okay.
Yeah, as you look at the exclusion and avoidance area issue that you brought up, Commissioner, those were all looked at early on, like you, as you mentioned, and we looked at the property as a whole, and we looked at all those considerations at that point in time. And then, as Dan mentioned, the NIT really was, as you mentioned, we thought of it as we looked at the whole thing as one piece of property, and we should have made the corridor just include the whole property.
Sure.
Because that's how we really looked at it. And unfortunately, we had the design. It's like, okay, well, that's where we feel like it's going to be on the property. So I think we met your concern by looking at it all inclusively up front, but we should have made that adjustment right away and just said it's not that big of a property, right. So we should have just said it's that whole property and just left it at that.
Yeah,
so.
Then it wouldn't matter where you
right.
put the fence
yeah.
or where the actual
exactly
specific quarter would have been.
Right.
All right, and we have do we have the documentation on the exclusion and avoidance areas for this stuff? And that maybe that's a question for Pat.
This is Jerry's case.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
Do you happen to know if have you certified or provided? Wouldn't we typically, Pat, when we're doing this, just have them certify that there's no exclusion or avoidance areas within this new corridor?
I have the file here, I guess.
I'm not seeing that in my stuff, but
I don't think we noted it in the filing, the exclusion and avoidance areas, if that's the question.
Okay.
In this revised filing.
So we can circle back on that, but I think that would maybe just be the key piece to tie this up is just a certification from the company saying that there's no exclusion or avoidance areas in the corridor.
Okay.
And is there anything else you think, Pat, on in that regard that would be needed?
We would want to get GIS of the changes so that we, to add to our existing GIS because it's changed now.
No, we filed. That's how we determined that it was not within the corridors as-built. Because the as-builts were filed as they are. So
right.
Yeah.
Right.
We already have that.
Okay.
Well, we can, Pat can share as we go or after any of the additional information, but I think that's the key piece for me is just making sure we have that on the record.
I suspect that when you did the application for the route and the corridor, you did a study area that was wider than the survey area?
Correct.
And how wide was that study area?
I'd have to look again. I think it was 1,000 feet.
1,000 feet, so that would probably 1,000 feet centered on the route would probably extend beyond the boundaries.
Right, correct.
So we have that.
Mm-hmm.
We can check the filing.
Okay.
And either validate that we filed it like that or follow up with your ask on that as well.
Can't think of anything.
I don't have anything.
I do like the direction you're going is just get that certified in it.
Yeah. Okay. I don't have anything more on that issue. Do you, Brian?
No.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that explanation.
Let's see. Oh, so on our tree and shrub mitigation, I'm not sure how much detail you want to get in to on this. So I mentioned earlier what had happened there, and really the suggestion by Jerry, given our survival rate, was, hey, change the language to be a different language so that we're not back trying to replant trees, decades into the future. What happened is we filed the plan. We had 21 trees that we removed, so we had to plant 42. We planted 100. Survival rate was about 26%. So then we went back, we planted another 84, and we didn't have much of a survival rate in the next 84, so we planted over 184 trees to the 42 that need to be planted with a 70% survival rate, and they haven't survived. So Jerry said, why don't you look at this new language change, and then you can get a plan from the NRCS and get that plan filed, and then 2 years later come back and report the survival rate. And so that seemed to make sense to us, and so we filed that request in that manner. So
one thing I'll say on that is the new plan is a lot more focused on outcomes. So be sure to explain. It doesn't really – the intention is not to relieve you of the obligation to have surviving trees. It's to make sure that you have the flexibility enough to have a meaningful tree and shrub plan. So maybe
sure.
you can find a different place to plant them, or you can find a a landowner who wants to have them, and they'll take care of them and make sure they survive, or right. something like that. So it's more meaningful and a little bit more flexibility. And then the outcome would be, here's, you know, here's what we want to do. Here's what it's going to be evolved. NRSC supports it. And then 2 years later, here's what the results have been. So
sure.
it's a lot more results oriented. Hopefully the results will be that, you know, you've actually done something meaningful for restoration.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yep.
Good.
Okay. Yeah, that's all I guess we were planning to cover today. We had a few other just pictures and stuff, but it's just informational things, so.
Well, the one other issue is the language change to eliminate, and that's not an issue for me. I just want to make sure my colleagues also don't have anything to add on that, and that is the revision to the certification relating to order provisions. It basically says that you're going to, it eliminates the need for a notice and opportunity for a hearing prior to any modifications to the site plan.
Right.
So you still have to notify us, and that you still have to get written approval from us. But in order for us to give that a written approval, we don't have to have a notice of opportunity for hearing. So that's the change to the language. Right. We've done it in other cases, and I think it's a good way to move. Just want to make sure that these guys are on board.
Commissioner, that was also at Jerry's request that we put that in.
Yep.
He'd seen the success of it in other filings. So
good.
Sounds good. I'm fine.
All right. Very good. I think that's it for this case then.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. The handout, as well as the audio recording of the proceeding, is now considered evidence. Is there any objection to this evidence becoming part of the official record upon which a decision will be reached? Staff?
No objection.
No objection. Company representative?
No objection.
Then the evidence as presented will now become a part of the official record upon which a decision will be made. Seeing no other matters for the record, this informal hearing is now closed. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot. Yes. Number two, now serving number two.
Second. I know we're going wrong. Thank you. Actually, I wasn't 100% sure. I was waiting for someone to say something. Nope. Must be good. Now, Steve, where did Steve go? Because I believe we may still be live on the recording.
We might be. He probably thought we'd go longer.
Sure. So just fair warning, everyone, we are still live. What is that called, the hot mic? Yeah. Hot mics? Oh, Steve will. I think Steve can clean it up because we
can share Thanksgiving recipes. That's not offensive to anybody.
Should not be.
Of course, it doesn't look like anybody around the table is responsible for cooking. Oh, good job, Pete.
I always cook everything from A to Z.
How do you make your turkey?
How do I?
We'll get Pete first.
The traditional way.
Yeah, roast it in the oven. How about you? No bag?
No bag.
Bag, no bag.
But I make a foil tent, so it's very... Oh. Very detailed.
So how many times when you check on it do you burn your hand trying to keep from, you know, the foil, you touch the top, you don't do that?
You're supposed to check on it?